They don't have very much hard currency, and this would cause significant problems for them.
Exploring how to enforce North Korean sanctions. It's Friday, September 15th. This is VOA Asia. Hello, I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Join us on Facebook at VOA Asia. Also ahead, on the ground in Bangladesh refugee camps. Afghans getting kicks from Kung Fu. Asians reviving U.S. cities. Healthy moving and going to the movies. It's all on today's VOA Asia. Illicit evasion and a thriving black market continue to mitigate the impact of sanctions intended to deprive North Korea of billions of dollars in revenue and needed components for its nuclear program. The latest round of United Nations sanctions imposed on North Korea this week for conducting its sixth nuclear test and the restrictions put in place in August for repeated ballistic missile launches, including intercontinental ballistic missile tests, could potentially have a significant impact. The Bank of Korea in Seoul says North Korea's gross domestic product in 2016 was $28.5 billion. The August sanctions would cut that GDP by $3 billion by banning coal, iron, lead, and seafood export industries. The newest restrictions could cost another $800 million by banning textile exports. And reductions in oil and gas imports and limits on worker permits would also cut off needed fuel and funds for North Korea's weapons programs. David Straub is a North Korea analyst with Sejong Institute.
If fully enforced, I think that the amount of hard currency that North Korea would lose would be enough to certainly concern the leadership, because they don't have very much hard currency, and this would cause significant problems for them.
A significant reduction in hard currency revenue would make it difficult for the military to purchase weapons components and sow discord between leader Kim Jong-un and the elite in the country, whose loyalty is bought to a degree with imported luxury goods. However, few expect these measures to be vigorously enforced, as the Kim Jong-un government has become adept over the years in evading sanctions, and North Korea's trading partners, especially China and Russia, have been complicit in permitting illicit transactions to continue despite official support for sanctions. David Albright, a nuclear proliferation analyst with the Institute for Science and International Security, spoke at a U.S. congressional hearing here in Washington on Wednesday.
Both countries have gotten away for far too long and have faced too few consequences for turning a blind eye to the sanction-busting business activities of their citizens and those of North Korea in using their economies.
To get around sanctions and avoid detection, ships suspected of illicit transporting North Korean coal have reportedly switched off their satellite GPS navigation devices when in Korean waters. The United States sought UN authorization to interdict ships suspected of smuggling banned items, but this measure was dropped to gain Chinese and Russian sanctions support. North Korea also uses trusted agents and third-party companies located in other countries to facilitate prohibited trade. Anthony Ruggiero is a former U.S. Treasury Department official who is now an analyst with the Foundation for Defense of Democracies, and he described how North Korea and Russia tried to cover up a clandestine oil deal during his congressional testimony.
A U.S. bank would not process this transaction between sanctioned parties. To avoid this scrutiny, the front companies were created in Singapore to obscure the nature of the transaction, allowing almost $7 million in payments for this transfer.
According to Bruce Klinger, a former CIA analyst who is now a senior research fellow at the Conservative Heritage Foundation, says North Korea's trading system consists of 5,000 companies that are centralized in China and run by a limited number of trusted individuals.
Although the shell companies can be swiftly changed, the individuals responsible for establishing and managing them have remained often for years.
While there are reports of Russian smugglers exporting oil and other sanctioned goods to North Korea, 90% of all North Korean trade goes through China. The Chinese say they are implementing sanctions along the border, but they have not been forthcoming in issuing clear restrictions to trading companies or in reporting how required inspections of all goods crossing the North Korean border are being implemented. North Korea analyst David Straub.
And I believe that in recent months, at least, the Chinese have not even been putting the statistics for oil exports to North Korea in their official records. So we really do need for China to be much more transparent.
This week, China reportedly stopped some of its major state-owned banks from providing financial services to new North Korean clients in what could be a sign of increased sanctions enforcement to prevent any U.S. retaliation. But sanctions advocates say that ultimately compelling full compliance from China and Russia and other countries that undermine U.S. sanctions will require the United States to levy secondary sanctions. The Trump administration has indicated it will consider secondary sanctions if the U.N. sanctions are not fully implemented. We thank VOA correspondent Brian Patton in Seoul for contributing to this report. These are among some of the top Asia stories trending on VOAnews.com. Japan calls for strict implementation of UN resolutions against North Korea. Thriving black market could mitigate North Korea sanctions impact. Observers say North Korea pushing longtime ally Beijing into a corner. Police widen Petro-Vietnam graft inquiry. Indonesia raises alert level for Bali volcano. Expanded coverage of these stories and more are on Facebook at VOA Asia. Also, stop by the VOAnews.com website. VOA Asia continues. The UN Children's Agency says trucks carrying emergency supplies to children affected by the Rohingya refugee crisis are now making their way to Bangladesh, where hundreds of thousands of members of Myanmar's Rohingya community have fled for safety. Up to 400,000 Rohingya so far have fled Myanmar for Bangladesh, and according to UNICEF, about 60% of them are children. The aid sent by UNICEF includes water, sanitation supplies, clothing, and other essentials, with more supplies scheduled to arrive throughout the coming weeks. Overwhelmed and underfunded, aid agencies in Bangladesh are at a breaking point. But nearly 3 weeks into Rakhine State's bloody conflict and the humanitarian crisis showing no signs of relenting, Katie Arnold visited the refugee camps near the southern city of Cox's Bazar and has this report.
Another village burning in Myanmar. More refugees arriving in Bangladesh. Around 400,000 Rohingya Muslims are seeking refuge in the country's southern state of Chittagong. But with refugee camps at full capacity and insufficient support from aid agencies, it makes for an inhospitable home.
Too many Rohingya have arrived, so there is not enough room for us in the camps. We do not know where else to go, so we are sleeping on the side of the road. It is very miserable.
New arrivals are clearing hectares of forest to make space for the spontaneous settlements that are springing up across the country's southern border. Rumours of a new camp quickly spreads among the roadside population, sparking a desperate scramble for the limited space. With little or no access to basic humanitarian services, conditions in these makeshift camps are dire, with some unable to access the life-saving assistance required after days walking through the Myanmar jungle.
I have been in the camp for 3 days with my five children. The youngest one is very ill and suffering from malnutrition. I'm worried that my child will die if I stay in the camp because we are not getting any support or medical aid.
Save for a few tarpaulin sheets, an official humanitarian response is difficult to find among the new Rohingya settlements. With a shortfall of $77 million, the United Nations admits it's unprepared to meet the demands of the growing refugee population. This water delivery at a new settlement near Uchiprang draws a crowd far larger than availability permits. Despite queuing for hours, some of these men will be forced to go home empty-handed.
We are struggling, like I believe like many other agencies, we are struggling for resources. We need resources fast.
While the aid organisations wait for their funding to trickle in, it has fallen upon the people of Bangladesh to meet the needs of the desperate Rohingya population. Every day, hundreds of citizens are rallying together to distribute food, water, and clothing bought from the local market. But their generosity will not sustain a refugee population that is growing day by day. Unless the official response is scaled up soon, this humanitarian crisis might turn into another humanitarian disaster. Katie Arnold for VOA News, Cox's Bazar.
Happening now in Asia, at least 19 people drowned when an overcrowded boat capsized while crossing the Yamuna River in northern India. Authorities say the boat was carrying anywhere between 40 and 60 people when it sank, well above its capacity of at least 30. At least 10 people were rescued from the disaster. Several others remain missing. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia.
Everybody was kung fu.
The Chinese martial art wushu, also known as kung fu, is taking hold in Kabul, Afghanistan. 20-year-old student Seema Azimi is not only the sport's first female practitioner in Afghanistan, but she's also the first woman to operate a school teaching the fighting style. Find out how your skills compare as Amy Katz narrates this report by VOA Afghan reporter Hekmat Sorash.
Seema Azimi is a black belt in wushu and won a gold medal in competition while she was a refugee in Iran. When she returned to Afghanistan, she opened her school. She has been criticized for practicing the sport as a woman, and not everyone in Kabul welcomes her school.
Some threatened me, and this vulnerability continues. I get warning letters saying sport is a mistake for girls. Their goal is to prevent women from advancement, but we also try our hardest. We will try to convince them that we can have a very impactful and effective role within our society.
Despite the obstacles, Seema hopes to spread wushu across Afghanistan. So far, she has around 20 students and says the number is growing.
I want this club to expand, and I want branches to be open in other provinces as well. I wish for the day that women from every walk of life and every tribe come to my club and participate in sport activities. Our women are strong and can bring about positive change only if they are provided with the opportunity.
Seema has her father's support. He says he is happy that his daughter is practicing the Chinese martial art, and he hopes she will make a big name for herself in the sport.
I hope Seema continues to achieve her goal, get ahead, and does not stop. I want her to find her way to the international games. I will be happy if she can train strong girls like herself, or even stronger than herself, for Afghanistan, our war-torn country, and be an example for others.
Seema Azimi has been selected to represent Afghanistan in the next South Asian Games. She hopes to bring home another gold medal. For video journalist Hikmat Sorosh in Kabul, Amy Katz, VOA News.
You're listening to VOA Asia.
Do you lead a busy life? Not always able to catch your favorite VOA radio or TV program? If you are keen to stay in touch with world news and events, give VOA Podcasts a try.
VOAnews.com.
Visit our website at VOAnews.com to learn how you can become a subscriber to VOA Podcasts and keep your life up to date.
VOA News, your trusted source for news and information.
This news alert from VOA Asia. Radio Free Asia has joined the ranks of media outlets shuttered under the new, almost blanket smothering of an independent press in Cambodia, as U.S. and European diplomatic efforts have failed so far to halt the country's descent into authoritarianism ahead of elections next year. Visit VOA Asia Facebook each day for top stories and great features to see and share. This is VOA Asia. As we continue with VOA Asia, a large influx of immigrants and refugees certainly helps to boost the population of a region, but they can also have social and economic impacts. The northern part of Columbus, Ohio, here in the United States, an abandoned wasteland in the early 2000s, has now been revitalized thanks to new Americans. VOA's June So, in this report narrated by Carol Pearson, takes you to the Morse Road corridor, where the city's true entrepreneurial heart is.
Exotic fruits and vegetables and other products in the Saraga International Grocery attract customers of all ethnic backgrounds and longtime Columbus residents as well.
Well, I bought romaine noodles and extra hot peppers. I like the fact that there's a big variety from all different places around the world.
Korean immigrant John Sung opened the 5,000 square meter grocery 4 years ago.
We have product from five continents, Africa, Asia, South America, Europe, all of the world, basically. We have 80 employees, which is refugee and immigrant from all of the world, too.
In a shopping mall about 2 kilometers away from Saraga Grocery is Juba Travel Agency. Ahmed O. Haji from Somalia opened it 9 years ago.
What drove me to start the business was the need for my immigrant people, predominantly Somali people who are going back home. And the means of transportation is an airline, so I think that was a lucrative business to get into.
Inside the Juba Mall, Somali refugees and immigrants own small shops and help each other bring in new customers. The ethnic shopping malls and restaurants are crowded along the Morse Road corridor that stretches through the north part of the city.
Morse Road is a very strategic location. It's one of the highest revenue-generated zip codes in Columbus. It's a great location. Morse has very diverse ethnic people that live in this area.
Haji says the revitalization of the corridor happened organically.
I did not have no incentive move or any advice from the city. Some refugees or some people, immigrants, have great business skills. So they got into the business without help of government and whatnot. And they flourished.
Over the past few decades, Central Ohio has seen a large flux of immigrants from around the world, with most refugees arriving in the last 10 years.
Based on a recent study, we could account for over 900 businesses that were opened specifically by the refugee community. And they then, in turn, employ over 23,000 individuals. The total contribution of refugees to the city's economy is $1.6 billion.
Since the executive order limiting travel from 6 countries, including Somalia, took effect in June, Haji says his business has declined dramatically, but he will stay in the city.
The city is very welcoming. Columbus, I have been here for almost 21 years now, and I am not going to go anywhere else.
For producer June So, I'm Carol Pearson, VOA News, Columbus, Ohio.
This news alert from VOA Asia. Japanese Prime Minister Shinzo Abe called for strict enforcement of a UN resolution against North Korea over its latest nuclear test. Wrapping up a 2-day visit to India, Abe, together with Prime Minister Narendra Modi, strongly urged North Korea to abandon its nuclear and ballistic missile programs. Visit VOA Asia Facebook. This is VOA Asia. Now on VOA Asia, peripheral artery disease is a painful condition caused when cholesterol and other fats build up and clog blood flow in the veins. It's associated with obesity, diabetes, and smoking, and it can be very painful. VOA's Kevin Enix has found out one of the most effective treatments involves getting up and moving.
Walk it off. It's an old saying that parents or football coaches use to keep kids moving in the case of a minor injury. But it turns out it is also effective for adults suffering from a more serious disease called peripheral artery disease, or PAD.
Peripheral artery disease is a blockage of the arteries that supply the legs. And patients who have peripheral artery disease tend to have difficulty walking. They often get pain in their calf muscles, or they can feel tightness or a burning, or even weakness.
Peripheral artery disease can be incredibly painful and debilitating.
It hurt from my calf to my hip.
The pain was just excruciating.
In the United States, treating the disease through surgery costs an estimated $4 billion a year. But supervised time on the treadmill, it turns out, can be just as effective.
It's one of the very few therapies that is effective, and suddenly it will increase access of patients to this effective therapy.
For people who are taking advantage of the program, it can be life-changing.
You know, there is life at the end of this. You know, I can get back to the things that I used to do, and I know it's going to be better. But you have to push yourself. You have to want to get better in order to do better.
4 months of the Simple program have put Zella Coleman back on her feet. She is now taking walks around her neighborhood without pain. Kevin Enix, VOA News.
There's a new film out from Academy Award winner George Clooney. It's called Suburbicon, and it looks at racial tensions in a fictional 1950s white neighborhood. As VOA's David Byrd tells us, this film stars some pretty good actors, Oscar winners Matt Damon and Julianne Moore.
Welcome to Suburbicon, a town of great wonder and excitement.
Hey there.
Built with the promise of prosperity for all.
Suburbicon is an idyllic, white, small-town suburb where everyone has manicured lawns and all the children ride their bikes down the street in safety. Gardner Lodge, played by Matt Damon, lives in the neighborhood with his wheelchair-bound wife, Rose, her sister, Margaret, and their son, Noah. But Gardner has a dirty secret. He owes the mob money, and that leads to a bungled robbery attempt by two mobsters that causes Rose's death. Meanwhile, the Myers, an African-American family, have moved in next door. Nikki makes friends with the Myers' son, but their friendship touches off racial violence. Soon the Myers are being blamed for a series of grisly murders that are actually being carried out by Gardner Lodge. Academy Award-winning director George Clooney said at the Venice Film Festival that he wanted to shine a light on some of the anger in America in 2017.
People are angry, and a lot of us are angry. Angry at ourselves, angry at the way that the country is going, angry at the way the world is going. And this seems to reflect that, and I think that that's okay. I don't think that that's a bad thing. I think that's probably a fair thing to do.
Matt Damon says that while the film was not directed at recent racial tensions, such as erupted earlier this year in Charlottesville, Virginia, it does highlight that race is still an issue in America.
We couldn't have predicted, obviously, you know, when we were filming these race riots, that we would have something like Charlottesville, where, you know, we weren't literally thinking that, you know, race riots would erupt in America right before this came out, but it does speak to the fact that these issues have not and are not going away until there's an honest reckoning in our country.
One woman was killed in Charlottesville when white supremacists and Nazis clashed with counter-demonstrators over the removal of a statue of Confederate General Robert E. Lee. Julianne Moore, who plays Gardner Lodge's wife Rose and his sister-in-law Margaret, says she has no problem with the removal of monuments to Confederate leaders because they symbolize institutional racism and slavery.
They must be removed. You simply cannot have these figures from the Civil War in town squares and in universities for our children to see. As a parent and as a citizen, I need to be active in the eradication of those, in the re-education of everyone. We have to take responsibility for it. We can't just say the next generation will do it too.
Suburbicon also stars Noah Jupe, known for The Night Manager and Wonder as Nikki Lodge. The story is based on a script written by Joel and Ethan Coen in the 1980s, but never produced. It is rated R for violence and language. In Washington, I'm David Byrd.
We have some late-breaking news on VOA Asia. North Korea has apparently fired another missile, this one flying apparently over Hokkaido in Japan. NHK reporting that Japan did not attempt to shoot down this latest missile, but did tell people to take shelter in buildings and underground and stay away from windows. There's much more on voanews.com. Stay up to date with the latest news at voanews.com. You've been listening to VOA Asia. We thank everybody in Myanmar who joined us today for our program via Facebook. VOA Burmese, thank you so much for joining us. Our director is Tracy Carter, engineer Carl Starling, managing editor Diane Gao, Ira Melman, David Byrd, and Ali Ogden on our VOA Asia team. I'm Jim Stevenson. We're in Washington. We hope you have a wonderful day.